permission so she can practice.
Yeah, you I'm you do you have screen share, Mitzi?
I do, yes.
I do have you as co-host, yeah.
Okay.
So if you want to go ahead and try it, Mitzi, then you'll know.
Okay, let me try.
Focusing on communication. And as we were putting the LTE together and thinking about different things and people that we wanted to have facilitate some of these, a few of us had recently been in a LOM sponsored workshop with Mitzi Schaefer. And after that, I was so impressed. I reached out to Mitzi and said, "Hey, do you have some time? I'd like to." And we had a really, really wonderful visit. And we talked about so many things, and it was donor related. It was fundraising and all things annual fund and special events. But Mitzi kept talking about telling the story and impact and communicating with families and donors and just how important that was. And how important communication is for everything we do. And as we were putting together the LTE, I just kept remembering that conversation that I had with Mitzi and how impressed I was with the way that she was focusing on telling the story and the impact of what we do. And we asked her if she would lead us in the discussion this morning around how we communicate so many different things. And she said yes. And so, Mitzi, thank you for saying yes. Thank you for being with us. And again, Mitzi Schaefer is she is Vice President for Development from Nova's Way down in North Carolina. And of course, do you live in South Carolina, just over the border? Yeah, because that's the whole Southwest, Nova's Way. And Mitzi is also so talented and well thought of. She has recently been asked to join as one of the consultants associates with GSB. So no surprise there. She is awesome at what she does, and we're so glad to have you here. So Mitzi, what can we learn from you this morning?
Awesome, thanks. First, I'm excited to be here. I am going to share my screen. And I think at the end, we'll be able to get you slides if you want them. But everything related to communication for me has to do with building relationships, which builds the annual fund. So I worked on staff at Luther Ridge 20, almost 20 years ago as a senior staff person. I was married to my husband, who's a pastor at the time. And then we stayed year round and went out into the world, worked at other organizations that aren't camp related. And this model that I'm going to talk about today translates into any organization. It's so simple, it's so foundational, but it will change an organization and it will build an annual fund like crazy if it's implemented. And so that's everything I do related to communication is for the purpose of building annual fund. And so that's what we're going to dive into. So at the end, you are welcome to put questions anytime through the presentation into the chat box. Full disclosure, I'm completely ADHD. And so Anthony is going to manage the chat box and pull your questions out. And at the end, we'll have time for that. And then once I'm not in the presentation anymore, you can just sort of say, "Hey, I have a question." That's fine too. But if a question pops in your mind and you want to make sure you get that into the presentation ethos, go ahead and do that in the chat box. So I want to start with something I learned on staff from two people that probably a lot of you know, Pastor Tim and Pastor Mary Kenneth Kuhn, who were my program directors when I was on staff at Luther Ridge. And they, every year in staff orientation, they have a conversation about the difference between deposits and withdrawals. And a deposit is just like you go to the bank and you put money in the bank, you make a deposit into something. And they use that in reference to campers. So camper first, camper first, camper first. That was the thing they used to talk about all the time with us. And they gave us an illustration that a child is like a debit card, not a credit card. So on a credit card, you can spend, you can make withdrawals on a credit card over and over and over and get this thing that you need up front, but then you have to pay it back and you have to pay it back with interest. But if you think about it like a debit card, that you have to make deposits into the account before you make a withdrawal, then it goes faster, you get better results, you don't have to pay this interest back later, and the relationship is strong. And that sat with me pretty hard as a counselor person though that long ago. And when I, after leaving and going to seminary and then starting my career as a deacon, I worked at a children's home, Epworth Children's Home in Columbia, South Carolina. And we, as an executive vice president, I implemented client first as a part of our model, but I also used it as a model for donor first. So it really is a model for any relationship, spouse first, partner first, friend first, whatever. But anytime we can make deposits first, we're going to get better results from whoever it is that we're building a relationship with. So I want to frame that. If you don't get anything else today, make deposits into your donors and they will make deposits into your bank account. Okay. So that is like the crux of everything that we talk about today. So how do we make those deposits? That's where I want to go next. First, before you can make deposits, you need to know what kind of deposits you need to be making and the best way to make them. So I advise and I would recommend that you sit down and plot out 2021 and have a communications map. What is your development or your program map going to be? And in our world, we try to align those next to each other so that they are talking to each other. They work together well. So the map does a number of things. It plots out when certain communications are going to drop. It plots out what the theme is going to be. It helps you work backwards to how soon you need to start thinking about and collecting stories and writing and getting things to the printer. And so I'm going to dive into what the individual things are, but I want to talk about the importance of a map and what it can do for you to know what your whole 2021 is going to look like before January 1st. So first, it prevents reactionary or panicked messaging. So when COVID hit at Novus Way, we already had our map that was in place. I knew when the spring ask letter was going to drop. I knew when the Christmas ask letter was going to drop. My message had to pivot, but it didn't have to be panicked. And I didn't have to panic because something broke or there was some kind of crisis. I still used my map to define when the communication was going to happen for the donor. Secondly, it strategically allows you to tell stories during specific pivot times, emotional pivot times. So like when camp starts back or at the end of camp, or for our alumni, for example, it might be during the midsummer pause weekend at Lutheridge. Different times of the year for each of our organizations have emotional connection to them. And I'm sure you can think of those like right off the top of your head. Those should be incorporated into your map and you should be strategic about using the emotional pull that those have as a deposit into a relationship. It helps you plan your budget. I've been a part of organizations who say, okay, last year we raised $1 million, and they divide that by 12, and that's their allocation projection for their budget for revenue for the next year. But donors don't give you money consistently every month. They give more at Christmas. They give more when you drop a letter. And so if you know what your map is and you know, okay, I'm going to drop this letter this date, then you know that next month as an executive person who's worried about the budget, that next month you're going to see a spike. And so it helps plan your budget. It's repeatable and it's measurable. So if you plan for 2021 and you have a calendar, then the next year you're repeating that and only changing what's underperforming. If something's overperforming, you're going to latch onto it a little more. If it's underperforming, then you need to shift a variable and see how it changes so that you can measure year over year. And that calendar is going to help you do that. If you just drop a letter whenever you feel like you need money or when something breaks, you can't measure the success of that over the message for the year before. It builds consistency with donors. Donors are creatures of habit. They give at certain times a year. If they're high net wealth and they visit with their financial person at certain times a year, it's connected to that. And so having a calendar taps into their patterns of behavior, but it also allows you to create the pattern of behavior. They will get used to getting certain things from you certain times of the year, and they'll start migrating towards what you need as an organization if you are consistent. It builds annual fund expectations. So there are a couple ways to think about annual fund, and I want to define what I mean by annual fund. So in a budget, when you think about different line items, there are capital things that have to be paid for. So the boiler breaks, or you need a new swimming pool, or you're going to build another cabin. Those are capital things. Then there's annual fund, which is paying for staff salaries, paying for the electric bill, paying for deferred maintenance that you have to pay for every year. Like those things that you know when you build the budget, they're in the budget. We're going to need new canoes next year. We're going to need whatever. If you can, as an organization, get to the point where those things are built into your budget, and you're not nitpicking little things all along the way to pay for, you know, just whatever thing breaks or you need all of a sudden, donors will learn that annual fund equals impact. So salaries are usually the biggest part of an annual fund, but salaries are the impact. People will say, I don't want to pay for salaries, but if your counselor changes the life of a camper, that's impact. They pay for that salary through the annual fund, but we didn't say, hey, pay for the counselor's salary. We said pay for the impact for the camper's life changing. But that is all annual fund. And so everywhere I've ever been, I go to places that need to be fixed, it seems. Part of it is helping get all those things into the budget as annual fund, so you don't have to worry. Your message is about impact, not about something that broke, okay? And then the last part of your map, what it's going to do is consistently promote camp. There is so much noise in the world. I saw a little GIF the other day on Facebook that said, this guy's been sitting out next to a waterfall or something for like 7 days, and he has no idea he's supposed to be anxious and fearful about what's going on in the world right now. because he's disconnected. And camp gets lost in all that noise. And so if you have a calendar, you are consistently keeping camp in front of your constituency in a way that, going back, that they is consistent for them, that they know is going to happen, they're expecting it to happen, and it brings comfort all year long. It connects them back to those places that are peaceful and loving and relaxing and enjoyable and nature-oriented, all those reasons that we love camp. And that is something that needs to break through the noise of the world right now. And that alone is a deposit into our people. So map is super important. Okay. Oops, I went too far. So what kind of interactions need to go on the map? Now I'm just going to talk about these and then we're going to break them down on the next slide. So first is some form of a newsletter. Okay. I believe it should be printed, but if that's not in the budget, it definitely needs to be electronic and on your website somehow. Email, social media, notes and cards, like flashing lights, notes and cards are huge deposits into your constituency. An ask letter, sometimes that's referred to as an appeal. Evan talked about this the other day. We talk about appeal letters, but like right now, in this kind of COVID world, it is good to pivot the language of appeal to all of these things encompassing your contact and your relationship and your reminding of donors. And then lastly is events. And I really want to break that one down a little bit because I hate events and I want to tell you why. So let's talk about what these things look like and what they do. So first, if you don't have some of those things, let me go back. If you don't have some of these things already, then we need to build them. Okay, that definitely needs to be. You have to have all of them. The world is too diverse right now for you to only pick one of these. You are leaving money on the table if you're not maximizing these things. So if you don't have them, let's add them and think about that with the next slide. If you do have them, let's evaluate how they're doing. So first off, does every word of your newsletter inspire belonging? Now, in giving, what do I mean by that? So, and if, please don't take offense to this. I'm just telling you practice that I've done. But every organization that I've been a part of, when I got there, the newsletter had lists and lists and lists of names. Now, there are places for lists and lists of names. And there are different patterns. Different people will say these things are important in different ways. But my philosophy is every word of your newsletter, if it doesn't inspire giving or belonging, it shouldn't be there. It's a waste of space. When I got to Novus Way and when I got to Epworth, we had pages and pages of names and I axed it. And I heard at Epworth, oh, people are going to be mad that you're not printing their names. It went out to 40,000 people, and I got one call from a lady who was upset. And you know what I did? I just printed her a copy of the names and sent it to her, and then she was fine. She got a personal connection. But I got tons and tons of emails and notes and gifts back saying, this is so inspiring. I love these stories. I can't believe the impact that you're making, because every word has to inspire giving and belonging, okay? Do your emails have an emotional draw? I'm getting used to my little ear guys here. Do your emails have an emotional draw? So don't send emails because you think you need to send emails. You need to send emails because you have information that is valuable to share, or because you have a story that is going to incite emotion, that is going to make people go, oh yes, I remember when that happened to me when I was at camp. I remember my counselor. I remember. That's what we want. We want them to connect that emotion back to their own experience, or be able to feel that their grandchild gets to have that kind of experience. Every email needs to do that. And it needs to have a call to action. One, not a ton, one primary call to action. Now, for us at Novus Way, because we have so many sites, we actually divide that out. Different people in our organization work in different revenue buckets. So hospitality, program, and giving. Even though we're bigger, I think even smaller, if you have one person sending emails, the same philosophy applies. If it's a program email, let it be a program email. If it's a hospitality email, let it be a hospitality email. If it's an impact story email, let it be an impact story email. And let people subscribe to the things they really want to get, because those are your primary people. The people who subscribe to ways to support camp and impact stories, those are the people you want to be spending a lot of time with. And so there are ways within like Constant Contact or MailChimp to be able to break that down and make that happen and let people subscribe or change their preferences. But that makes a huge, huge difference. And every time I've implemented that in an organization, my open rate has jumped up a couple percent. So does social media encourage a join me culture? Now, the newsletter is inciting belonging and telling stories. The emails are gonna have a call to action. This is designed, these little things are designed for the platform. Social media is a join me culture. So are your social media posts, are they encouraging people to react, to leave comments, to share, to tell their own story in the comments? That's what you want your social media to be doing. It can be informative. It can say, hey, there's an event coming. Those are good too, but it also needs to create a join me culture. And that is a good primary use of social media. That needs to be included in your calendar. Are your notes and your cards personal and timely? If I make a gift on Monday, January the 1st, and I don't get a letter from you until the middle of February, I've already forgotten that I've made that gift. My emotional connection to that gift is over. So it needs to be super soon after the gift is in your hand. 48 hours is the standard recommendation. Our acknowledgement letters, we try to get out in 48 hours. Right now with COVID, it's a lot harder because we're a limited staff, but our personal thank you notes go out within 10 days because there's still an emotional connection to the gift. And Jan and I, during COVID, and I would strongly recommend this, write a personal thank you note or email to every single donor. Now, I don't do that all the time. We might now, moving forward, because we've been able to do that and maintain that. But right now, that is so critical for making deposits, because the biggest way as a camp that we make deposits is through program. Having people on site in our programs is the biggest deposit we can make into their lives. But we can't do that right now. So we have to maximize these other ways of making deposits. And then the last part is, does your ask letter ask for impact or stuff? if you want to grow your annual fund, if you're doing all these other things, asking for the impact is what will become consistent donor annual fund behavior. Asking for stuff is what will become inconsistent capital behavior. There are people who like to give big gifts to capital projects, and there is a huge place for that, especially in capital campaigns. But if you're trying to run an organization every day for year after year after year, the annual fund is critical, absolutely critical. And so when something does need to happen and you do need to ask for stuff, donors know, oh yeah, this is real, because they don't do this all the time. It has a different level of importance to it. And I would argue that asking for stuff should be done one-on-one. Asking for annual fund should be done in the macro. It's harder to do, it's harder to frame until you get into the practice of it, but it is critical. And then how do we tell the story? So I created this little formula. It might feel weird. A saga, like all I can think about is Twilight, right? Like it's a saga. And a saga has a bad connotation as a long drawn out story. But a saga with a C is different. So how do you tell a story? If you start with the change, before you sit down to write any communication, think about what the change is that happened for the camper or for the counselor, right? We all know that one of the biggest impacts of our ministry is what it does for camp counselors. That is important. That's a story that needs to be told. That's faith formation. That's leadership development. That's all the good stuff. That's how we change the world. And so what's the change? That's the first thing you want to identify before you sit down to write. The second thing is, what was the agent of change? So if a camper changes, the agent of change is not that they were on site. The agent of change is that they built a relationship with a counselor that they trusted, and the counselor is the agent. Okay? So that's the next thing we want to think about. Third is, what funded, what gift paid for that agent of change? What was the gift? So an annual fund gift pays for a counselor, right? So that's the impact. And then you ask for that gift to pay for that agent of change. So then their gift pays for the impact, for the change that happens. I have used this model in a number of organizations, and it works every time. So that's how I tell stories. That's how they're written. And so I don't always ask in a newsletter. I do put an envelope in a newsletter, but at the end of every story, I don't ask for money. I stop at the gifts to camp made this change. I stopped at the G. And then, because those are deposits, my newsletter, the link is a deposit. All those good stories, story after story, just filling their hearts with goodness and making them love camp even more. And then they get the ask letter and they're like, oh yeah, I remember those stories. That was really great. So the newsletter for us is a soft ask. It's got an envelope in there, but we don't specifically say usually give money. If it's a particularly good story, I might play on it a little bit, but not as a general rule. And then the ask letter reminds them of all those things. And the ask letter has a story in it too. Every ask letter I write has a story. I don't want them to look through and find the highlighted parts and just go, oh yeah, they're asking me for money. I want to grab them right in the beginning and make them want to know what happens to little Ella. I want them to know what change this particular child or this particular camper is going to experience. And every single word has to keep them there until they get to the end. And that deposit is made, that emotion is felt, and they make a withdrawal. So that's how the stories are written. If you want samples of our stories, you can go to novusway.org. I think it's /impact stories. But if you scroll down to the bottom of any of the home pages, they're kind of like the blog posts. Every one of our newsletter stories goes in the newsletter. It goes in the posts on our website, and it goes in an email separately, because I can't know that every single audience gets every single thing. And if they've seen it, they'll skip it. They won't. I mean, if it's a feel good story, they won't go, "Oh, they're sending me more feel good stories." They'll go, "Oh yeah, I read that story. I don't need to read it again." Right? We're inciting a different emotion from them. So that's the end of my presentation. Anthony, I'll stop sharing and then we can go to questions.
All right, I'll start with a couple quick ones. So when you say personal notes, are you using a personalized form letter and adding a note to the bottom when you sign it? Or are you writing new letters, notes for every single gift? And I wondered about that too, because if we send, there's this a form thank you letter that goes out for tax purposes that everybody gets. But we also send, and we chose a certain amount. Everybody who gives over this amount also gets a handwritten thank you note too. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, great question. So pre-COVID, now let me say, I live 2 hours from the office, and does my other development person. So we were, I can't remember what they were doing before I got there, but we were pulling out 500 and higher. And they, like when I would go up once or twice a week, I would personally sign a note on the acknowledgement letter. So I make language distinctions between the acknowledgement letter, which is for tax purposes, has the little gibberish at the bottom about not getting goods and services, and a personal note, which is this. So it's like an actual thank you note. So, but because I can't get to the office, I don't go up there anymore because of COVID. I basically am working from home. We switched to the acknowledgments go out from the office and we send personal notes or emails from home. But every person gets a touch. That's the key. There's a difference in your acknowledgement letter that you have to send and the thing that you do or send because you personally thank them. And whether it's written on the acknowledgement or in a separate note, like if budget is an issue and sending stamps and an extra card is too much, then write it on the note. That's okay too. People just love that personal touch. Did that answer everything?
I think so, but the person who asked the question be able to ask. Okay, so logistically, what platform is your map in? Spreadsheet, project management software, et cetera? How big or detailed is it? I'm thinking how huge a project it would be to combine our communication plans for program development, retreat center into one map. But your presentation sparked a realization of how valuable that map would be for all of our teams. Help me feel like this project wouldn't be a 100-hour project.
It's not. And okay, y'all are going to learn way too much about me. Takes me about 20 minutes to do my development calendar. Okay, and I can tell you what it is right now. They get a newsletter once a quarter. If you want to write this down and steal it, totally fine with that. They get a newsletter once a quarter. I drop a spring appeal, usually in time to like, rah-rah, camp is coming back, and Christmas. So they get 2 ask letters a year. They get the way we divided, and I think this works anywhere, Thursday is my day for email. So I don't have to worry about what program is doing. Thursday is my day for email. Like program gets like Monday and whatever. And then special announcements are on Wednesday. Like if Bo needs to make an announcement or something about the state of camp. So that works really well. So every first Thursday, I send a story. Every third Thursday, I give an update on our Light the Fire appeal and other things that I glean from staff meeting. So in staff meeting, if Luther Springs says, hey, the Atonement Center is here, or if Luther Ranch says, hey, we had 14 riders on horses this week, or a unicorn birthday party, which was super fun to tell, then I write those things down and I include those in that third Wednesday email. And then, okay, so newsletter, emails, the thank you notes are consistent. I get a report from my staff person once a week about all the donations that come in. Events. Oh, I forgot to mention events. So I am not a huge proponent of events for raising money. I think they are, I don't mean to step on toes. I'm just speaking my truth here. But I think they are labor intensive. They cost a lot of money. The return on the investment is usually lower than what I could do just going and asking one or two people for $20,000 or $30,000 for something. And so if I took that time and spent it with people instead of, you know, invitations and all those things, except for the day of giving. I think the day of giving was a critical pivot for this time that we are in now. And we will continue, we are going to continue doing an annual day of giving because the system is down enough now, it doesn't take me hardly any time at all to put one of those together. So, I forgot to mention that, but I did just want to say that. So that's my calendar. My calendar is literally in Google. It's on repeat. I work backwards. I know my printer needs 3 weeks to get the proof. And I know I need 2 weeks to write it. And so in my Google calendar, it says link drops on this day. Then back 3 weeks, it says link to the printer. And then back 2 weeks, it says start writing the link. And that's how I do it. Like I don't overthink it. I don't overthink a lot of things.
Thank you.
Yep.
I'm going to combine a few questions, and there were a lot of comments about events. They wanted you to go further about.
Sorry, I missed that.
No, but you did. You just did. So okay. That's great. So talk about why it's important to help the entire professional staff understand these concepts around fundraising. Why does your program director and why do people who don't have anything to do with this need to understand all of this?
Okay. So let me tell you a story. When I got to Epworth as the first development director, we were getting ready for Christmas and I was going to drop my Christmas appeal. Like I was going to drop it. And they said, oh, no, at Christmas, we ask for toys. And I was like, huh, okay, that's fair. All the kids need a toy, got it. And I said, well, what do you, you know, the conversation continued until I was taken to a whole cottage full of toys. Full of toys. I'm like, y'all, you can't ask for toys. You got a whole cottage full of toys here. You can't ask a donor for toys when these are all sitting here. Some of them 4 and 5 years old. They have to go. They have to be gone. This has to be used for clients, not toys. So all of it went away. Then we started talking about everybody on staff is a development officer. Every relationship that you build builds trust with the organization. It makes deposits. But if program is doing its own thing and development is doing its own thing, we're going to abuse our donors. Donors like to ask, what do you need? And program likes to say, well, I need new canoes, or I need toys for the kids for Christmas, because that is what they're thinking in the immediate. But when you build a strong annual fund, the toys and the canoes are in the budget, and you don't have to worry about that. And so when everybody's on the same page about what we're trying to accomplish in the development office, and everybody sees themselves as a development officer, they know the answer to that question is, the best thing you can do is pay for impact. You can pay for change. You can pay for the lives of these children experiencing the love and grace of God. That's what the world needs. That's what we do. That's what we need you to pay for. And if you're a program person or maintenance person or whatever, and you're not comfortable with that, that's okay. Send them to me. That's what I tell them. Send them to me, because what I'm going to do is put the three of us together. Instead of answering the question, say, if you're not comfortable, then say, hey, you know what? Let's go. Let's talk to development about that. Let's have a conversation together. You're off the hook. And then I'm going to say, hey, staff person, you have the relationship. I want you beside me when we have this conversation. And I can read the donor and say, yeah, they're only going to pay for stuff. Or I can pivot them to an annual fund donor that I'm going to keep forever. That's why it's important for everybody to be on the same page.
So,
which, by the way, I would like to add, the next year after we cleaned out the toys, we pivoted people from giving toys to giving gift cards, and then we pivoted them from giving gift cards to money. And the next year we had $87,000 in gift cards that turned into money, not a cabin full of toys, cottage full of toys. So just a FYI.
So I'm interested in the potential of staff alumni who should be easy to remind. It should be easy to remind them of the impact of camp. Do you have strategies for the 25 to 35 age donors and maintaining contact with them?
That's a great question. So full transparency, when I got to Novus Way and went through the database, I expected most of our donors to be alumni. I was a donor as an alumni. It was 10%. Shameful. Shameful. 10%? Are you kidding me? So we launched conversation around recurring giving. So I believe that that is a population who understands subscription language, Netflix, Stitch Fix, Hulu, Apple, whatever. And so we launched language around, even if you do $5 a month, friends, you are supporting this ministry. In August of 2019, we had 11 recurring gifts, and now we have 183 as of last week, and it's over $15,000 a month. And 80% of those people are alumni. We started an alumni network intentionally, for the purpose of, and in the past, we have had the habit of asking alumni to pay for the lights in the pool or for something capital, because we've been in capital campaign mode for 15 years as an organization. That group of people does not want to pay for that, but they will pay for impact because they just felt it. They just experienced it. It's still affecting their lives. And so if you want that group, you have got to shift to impact, because that's what they want to pay for.
Part of this question, I think, relates to some of your previous answer. But Mitzi, you mentioned inconsistent giving patterns for donors. Do you have thoughts or insights into building a sustained monthly giver program? Are there certain donors that this would be a good option for? That's where I saw the connection with the crew, the subscription concept.
Yeah, so I do. And recurring giving is really the direction I believe every organization needs to go. It's happening in the business world. It needs to happen in the nonprofit world. That is going to be the lifeblood and sustainability of our organizations. And so what we did this year is when I segmented Christmas, the Christmas appeal, the people who give annually every year at a certain amount who had already given this year, their ask letter actually says, you are one of our best supporters. And what we've learned is that we need to be able to guarantee and trust. This is not the exact language I use, but basically we need to be able to guarantee and trust that that our annual fund is sustainable. And the way that we see that needs to happen is through recurring or monthly giving. And we set a goal of 400 recurring gifts. Now, I am a firm believer in audacious goals. Absolutely a firm believer in audacious goals. If it's audacious, if you set your goal at 100 and you get 100, okay, you got 100. If you set your goal at 400 and you get 200, that's more than 100. So be audacious about it. Set a goal and tell your people that it's a goal. Like, donors need to know that. They want to be a part of the solution because they love you, because they know it makes a difference. And you have to frame it in impact. You can't frame it in paying the bills. You have to frame it in impact. Saga, okay?
So with all that you've talked about, how would you adjust this formula to fit staying connected with campers and parents and congregations? Not necessarily asking for money, but just keeping camps connected to our constituency.
Mm-hmm. I'm not, can you say that again? Cause I don't feel like those are separate things. So I'm not.
So you're not asking for money. It has nothing to do with the annual fund, but just sharing of information and communicating with families, campers, congregations. How would you shift this or broaden this formula to include just engagement in other ways?
Yeah. So my donor base or my database in the development office is everybody. I don't make distinctions. If I'm approaching a donor for a larger gift, then I'm going to look at their past donor behavior. But if I'm telling stories, everybody gets it. I mean, we have three different systems that we have been working diligently to connect the right way and not have overlap and repeat and duplicates. But everybody needs those stories because that's going to help program too. I mean, if you have somebody that was a camper or that was on staff and now they have grandkids, but their kids don't go to church, you telling that story to that grandparent who maybe isn't a donor or somehow getting connected to them through the congregation is going to remind them of how important that was to them. And they're going to want their grandchild to have that experience. That everybody's on the table. Everybody's fair game.
So I want to say I'm getting a lot of questions privately and on the chat.
Okay.
More than we have time for.
Okay.
I'm doing my best, folks.
That's okay. And I'm happy to talk to anybody after. Like, please, I want you to be successful. So please call me. You can email me if you want to have a conversation. I'll be very transparent. If it's something I can answer quickly, I'm happy to do that. If it's a deeper dive, then we'll have a different conversation. So, yeah.
One that has run through my mind for years, and several people have asked. So many of our camps have small year-round staff. How would you recommend setting up the giving calendar based on non-specialized staff And how do executives give the right percentage of their time to be the development director and the executive director?
Okay, executives, don't get mad at me. You give all the time you can give to it and don't look for excuses not to do it. Like, there will always be a crisis. There will always be chaos. There will always be a reason to not block off 3 days in the week to go visit donors or to get those stories out. But if you can get ahead of it, if you can get in front of it, if you can say, this thing doesn't matter for 1 month, these crises, I'm going to give them to somebody else, and you can get ahead of it, 90% of your crisis is related to money. If you get ahead of it and the money's coming in, then you continue to open up and create time for yourself to spend on telling the story and development. And I say that as somebody who experienced it. That when I got to Epworth, we had to build performance and quality improvement. We had to build a human resource department for over 100 person staff who all reported to me up under there somehow. We were raising $1.4 million in 3 years. We were raising $2.6 million. Guess what an extra $1.2 million does? It gets you a leadership team who can put out the crisis so that you can do the things that build and strengthen the organization in the future. It feels like you can't get there, but you have to say it's important enough to say the other things have to wait until we can build this solid foundation, because most of your crisis is related to money.
So, any advice on how to gently redirect donors to projects that Camp is actually interested in, not one that we need? Specifically, we have adult campers who think that they see a need they want to give to items that aren't our priority.
Yeah, honesty. So that's a withdrawal. Let me go back to the first slide. Redirecting a donor to the needs of the camp instead of their needs is a huge withdrawal from a donor. So you can't do that and salvage the relationship if you haven't made deposits. So I can't give you magic words to say to them, because the words are directly related to the donor. Donors will give to what they see as the most important thing. And you have to put the work in ahead of time to say the impact is the most important thing. I've told a donor that we're leaving $1 million on the table because they wanted to build a gazebo that was going to cost me 2.5. Need a gazebo? Come on. Like, I got kids that can't find homes. Like, let's talk about the priorities here. But I had a good relationship with that donor. And so if somebody is saying that to you and you don't feel like you have the relationship yet, then say, you know what? I hear you. I hear that this is important to you. Can I spend some time with you and share a little bit more about camp? And then you have to decide if they're worth that time. You have to decide if they're worth that time. Like, if they want to give you $200 for something, I mean, percentage of budget matters, right? Like, that's part of it too. But my best advice is relationship. I mean, you've got to have that conversation. Or bring in your development person as the bad guy. I've done that too for program staff. Like, if the program staff needs to maintain that really good relationship, I've come in and said, hey, you know what? Mr. Such and Such says that you're really excited about this thing. Can I talk to you about what our real needs are right now? And if we can get those needs met, then as an organization, we can think about that need in the future. And that's worked too.
We are living in divisive times. Our camp, as well as LOM, have published statements on inclusivity, race, and racism. Mm-hmm. This is political to many of our donors and has caused some interesting conversations. Any advice on navigating these political minefields?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I heard the lady from, I can't remember what the name of that place is. She came to Convo one year for South Carolina. And she said there are so many people who need to hear the gospel that when we clamp down the gospel for the one or two people who might leave, we're missing all these people that need to hear the gospel. If you know who you are as an organization and you own that, and it means that some people leave, there are lots of people who it will invite. So that's the first thing I want to say. The second is, point it back to camp. Why did they love you to start with? Did they love you because they felt belonging? Did they love you because they felt welcome? Because if they did, remind them of that. You felt welcome here. You felt belonging. And we don't get to decide which children get to feel that welcome and that belonging. God does. And so we're just extending the welcome and the belonging. And I don't waste time. If they can't hear that, I got other people who need to hear that. But do it with care. I mean, do it with care.
There are several questions about sort of nuts and bolts kinds of things. Venmo versus other kinds of online giving. Do you have any experiences with these different, I don't know what you call them, vehicles, avenues for donors to give? Are you seeing different trends with different age groups? What are you guys liking? What's working best?
Well, I'm going to tell you my ideal, and then I'll tell you what we use, and then tell you, you do whatever you have to do. So,
in 2 minutes or less.
Okay. So I love Blackbaud, but Blackbaud is incredibly expensive, but it has an online platform that you can use. We use Donor Perfect. It's simple to use. It's not terribly expensive. And it has an online platform that you can create a form and have it on your website. One button click, it goes straight to the donation form. I like to send everybody to that same consistent place, because as you do this and you get more donors, you need to create a manageable structure underneath it. Now, if you have a system for Venmo and that's easy for an event or something like that, then I think that's fine. PayPal, if you don't have donor management software, but I think whatever you're doing, it needs to be a one-step process for the donor, and it needs to be a minimized process for you on the back end, or you'll quit doing it. It'll get frustrating. That probably didn't answer the question for the person, but I can talk to you, whoever that is, I can talk to you about what you have, and maybe there's a solution inside of it somewhere.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Mitzi. Lots of food for thought, lots of interesting things to continue to wrestle with our own teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really, you know, back to the conversations we've had, I great reminder, the impact, telling the story all the time in many, many different ways. Social media was another question. The need to coordinate the message from camp and staff and our mm-hmm. own personal. So that's something that our organization teaches. So anything else to share about social media? And do y'all have policies about mm-hmm. how you deal with certain things?
Yeah, our social media is done in the same day of the week structure, like development on Thursday, program on Monday and Tuesday, I think it is. Sorry, I don't pay attention to the other days because they're not my days. So like today, for example, we hit $1 million for the Light the Fire appeal, and that email went out, or that social media went out today. And so it goes on all our pages, and then I just grab it off of our page as a share to put on my personal page, and I leave comments on the bottom of it. But I find if you have a funnel, like if it's going through one person, and everybody can have access to it, but you need to be able to all be looking at the same funnel. And so it's consistent. And if you know your brand, you know your mission, you know your vision, you know your values, you know your branding, your colors, your fonts, your brand marks, then whatever you put out should at least look consistent and like it came from you. Everything you put out without reading it should say to your constituency, oh, that's from camp.
Awesome. Thank you.
Mitzi, yeah. I want to say thank you on behalf of all of LOM for this great presentation. And I'm particularly grateful for your comments right at the closing here about not tiptoeing around our values. And I just think that's so important for us. And when we tiptoe around what's really important to us, I think we lose potentially many, many support persons that will not support us because they don't see our values being being explicitly stated. And I go back to the welcome and inclusion retreat that Carol Joy Hollenkamp did a couple of years ago for outdoor ministry leaders. And Austin Hartke, the presenter there, talked about how for marginalized people, when they see silence and they don't see the words written, they take that as a proactive way of not welcoming them. So I just think that's so important. Thank you.
Can I just piggyback for 10 seconds there? Even in for-profit business, they will tell you have to know your niche. You can't be all things to all people. I mean, if you walk down the grocery aisle, how many different versions of everything do you have? And the same applies. If you don't know who you are, then you end up just trying to be all things to all people, and you can't.
Thank you. Anthony, I didn't mean to steal your thunder in terms of providing closure for this session. Hey, we're having devotions in less than half an hour. And that's Chad has put on the chat what the link is for the devotions. Today, devotions are going to be led by Rebecca Chelland, who is the executive director at Pock River Bible Camp in North Dakota. And I think it will be very worthwhile. It'll be a very worthwhile 20 minutes or so. So I hope you join us. And then the 4 o'clock LTE session today will be great too. Thank you everybody for being with us.
Thanks for navigating questions, Anthony. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was fun. It was great content. I'm getting a lot of people just messaging me, telling me how great it was.
Good. That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, okay. Mitzi.
Yeah.
Hey, Anthony, I just made you host. I'm going to leave, but I know a few of you are staying on. So you'll just close it off. I'm going to stop the recording right now, too. Oh, I made you host, Anthony. Would you stop the recording?